All right. I guess I'll just get into it. I'm David Brothers, and I'm joined with
Esther Inglis-Arkell.
And we write for Fourth Letter, and this is the very first Forecast, where we're going to talk about comics, tell a few jokes, and hopefully have some fun.
Telling jokes? I didn't have that prepared.
Oh. where do you want to start? We've got a lot of things to talk about. We've got a couple books that came out this week that one or the other of us enjoyed. We've got Battle for the Cowl wrapping up this week.
Well, I guess we better start with Battle for the Cowl. I guess that's the big buzz in the comics world.
Basically, Battle for the Cowl is the in-between story of why Dick Grayson took on Batman's costume and name after Batman died. And it kind of tells what happened after Batman died and before he took on the costume. And it was written and drawn by Tony Daniel. And it came out over the course of 3 issues. So, Esther, what did you think overall of Battle for the Cowl?
You know, I would have enjoyed calm negotiation for the cowl. Really good vigilante management for the cowl.
Huh.
Better than the actual battle.
I thought that the battles as they were drawn were really pretty lackluster. Like, the way Tony Daniel choreographs a fight scene doesn't make any sense at all. Which is weird, because he's been doing comics for like 15 years at this point. There's a bit in the 2nd issue where Tim Drake gets stabbed in the chest by a batarang. It's like heart deep, and then it turns around on the next page, so it's an upside down batarang, so it's been twisted. And in the 3rd issue, he's like, good thing I was wearing Kevlar, and there were only little shards of batarang in my chest. And it's just little things like that that had me thinking, like, wow, they didn't put much thought into this at all.
Well, I wrote about how Jason Todd is the main antagonist in this, and he seems kind of like Jason or Freddy Krueger. Whenever any one character splits off from the rest, they have a couple of moments where they just walk around and they think, oh, things are finally calmed down, and then... It's Jason!
The red eyes on his costume don't help with that either. Because he just looks like a demon bat, like the one from Batman 666, instead of, like, you know, a human being.
I don't know why he picked that costume unless he's psychically linked.
Yeah, I don't know. Where did he get it? Like, I assume there was only one of those ever for the crazy Batman guy, but...
Well, Batman himself mentioned that it frightened him, so maybe he put it in the trophy room in the big... Things that scare me. Room.
Is that like next to the Dead Robin's room?
The Dead Robin's room, the things that scare me room, along with like emotional commitment the Bane mask or something.
I really like the bit where he, probably the one thing I liked in this series was the giant room of Batman costumes with like the Neil Adams Batman, the Jim Aparo Batman, and then like the weird chainmail that Ra's al Ghul gave him.
I didn't see the rainbow Batman, and I think we were all looking for that.
Yeah, that would have been very nice. Maybe he keeps that one in the closet or something somewhere. Or it's what he's wearing wherever he is now, since he's dead or in the past or whatever.
What struck me most for Battle for the Cowl was it seemed like you could completely skip it.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have missed a beat with the regular Batman continuity. The end of Batman R.I.P.
Yeah.
It ended with Batman crashing into the ocean.
After punching a helicopter.
And Damian kind of making himself useful.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick Grayson holding...
Making himself useful by running an ambulance off of a bridge.
Well, that's kind of the best you can hope for from Damian.
True.
And Dick Grayson holding the bat cloak while looking out over the city moodily, which is kind of the symbolic assumption of the bat persona.
Mm-hmm.
And then went through Battle for the Cowl, where they went through just any number of ridiculous ones, although I would have loved seeing Squire be Batman.
Oh, I want to see her in books all the time. She's probably my favorite like peripheral bat character that's not a villain. Just because she's, like, just this plucky British girl. And she's really good at communication, and that's her skill. Like, the Justice League that Grant Morrison and Ed McGuinness did years ago is just, like, 3 short issues, but Squire figures she's, like, one of those important characters in the book because she's one who brings the Justice League back from the real world, basically. And she was just adorable.
Yeah, I read that one.
Yeah.
She was hanging over a precipice and had...
Like wrist guards?
Yeah, wrist guards and something supporting her waist and also like a little thing supporting her ponytail.
Yeah. Definitely.
But when you got to the end of Battle for the Cowl, it was still Damian being Robin, because I guess he fits in the costume. And yeah.
Which Robin Dick costume Grayson. Is he wearing? Well, because if you think Tim's like between 16 and 18, depending, Damian's like 9.
Yeah, but Tim's small. Oh. Damian's a big 9-year-old. probably. Oh, he must have been wearing one of Dick Grayson's costumes from back in the day, which is why he added his own pants.
Yeah.
Because
kids these days know not to wear short pants.
No, those weren't short pants.
Panties.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goodness. It's funny you mentioned that it was kind of, I guess you didn't really need to read Battle for the Cowl, because I read a Grant Morrison interview yesterday on IGN, and he says that, like, quoting here, I just wanted to come in, and he says he knows some fans don't like this approach, but he wanted to come in when the story is underway and the fun has started. Then he talks about how the background stuff, like how Dick Grayson became Batman, could be taken as just it happened, and you could kind of guess how it happened. And then later he says, it's all in the story. I just didn't want to front-load it with expository material, because I wanted to jump straight into the action with the characters, to be honest. So really, you didn't need Battle for the Cowl at all to understand like the next year and a half of Batman stories.
I can kind of understand that. I can understand just wanting to tell a fun story.
Yeah.
With a bunch of characters and not having it be hamstrung by having to get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and then even with kind of explaining it as you go along, you can do that in like background dialogue where Dick's like, hey, wasn't it funny when I became Batman that time? Or something like that.
That's what they did for the entire year one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was a tough year. Well, it's over now.
So Battle for the Cowl had like 18 billion tie-ins, approximately. But how many series are coming out of it? There's Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's Batman and Robin. Mm-hmm. Judd Winnick is doing Batman with maybe Mark Bagley, I think.
Let's see. If you count Oracle as a Battle for the Cowl book, even though it didn't really tie in. it had the title, but
same
it didn't
level
really
of quality.
Tie in. Cruel! But I think that's going to lead into the new Batgirl book, so
yeah,
possibly 3.
Oh, and then Detective Comics starring Batwoman, which I guess has nothing to do with Battle for the Cowl. So I'm not sure why they didn't just start that up a little bit early, other than having like a unified June launch for all the good Batman books. I think the most, like setting aside the top tier books, the Batman and Robin and Detective Comics, I really want to read Batgirl, but I don't know if I'll like it, because it's all about who's under the cowl.
That's true. It's kind of going to be just, when you get to the end of every single issue, you're like, yeah, that was interesting. Who cares? Who is it? Yeah. Who is it?
Because
just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I guess, like, the front runner is that it's going to be Barbara Gordon again, even though she's, like, mid-30s at this point.
Yeah.
And Batwoman is younger than Batgirl, which wouldn't make any sense at all. Maybe Cassandra Cain, even though she's already been Batgirl and...
Awfully cheerful for Cassandra Cain.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess they can't just say New Earth, and that's why she's happy now.
I think it's going to be Calculator's daughter,
but
who I don't know. And since it takes me a while to warm up to characters,
yeah,
not entirely thrilled about. But it's Batgirl, so I can't let a Batgirl book stay on the shelf.
I just hope that Calculator's daughter gets to be in some good stories sometime soon, because like the Teen Titans stuff was horrible.
I didn't know she was in the Teen Titans stuff.
She was mauled by the Wonder Dog.
Oh, the Wonder Dog, who also ate the two other characters.
No, the Wonder Dog was the pet of Wendy and Marvin from the Super Friends cartoon, who was secretly an evil demon dog or something. Oh. And
that's par for the course for Teen Titans.
Yeah,
everyone.
For the past few years, you're either a demon dog or an evil Teen Titan. But he transformed into the demon dog. He ate her brother, and I thought he ate her, and I quit reading the book, like at the scene where I thought that she was eaten, because it was just too bad. But apparently she survived and was put into a coma.
She survived without a scratch on her. I mean, if they'd been eaten by the Wonder Python, then I could see it, because they just swallow you whole, but...
That's right, the dog was all claws and teeth, and somehow was stalking around Teen Titans Tower, like, unbeknownst to all of the Teen Titans who were hanging out. But, you know, hey, DC Comics, what can you do? But yeah, so that's her. And previous to that, her entire thing was that her and her brother would work on the computers in Titan's Tower. They showed up on maybe 6 pages over like a year and a half. So she's almost a complete cipher. You could tell any story you wanted with her, which I guess is good if you want to make her into Batgirl. But didn't she use the use of her legs at the end of the Oracle comic?
She did.
That was one of 3 pages I saw. And it was like condensed super drama.
Yes, it was. It was a remarkable number of coincidences that could, down the road, mean anything, all packed into.
Yeah. And Barbara Gordon said that she had basically a Google alert for calculator, and that if his name popped up online, she would explode his head, because one time he exploded someone's head.
Honestly, that was my favorite part.
Yeah, I just love that that's happening while his daughter has just woken up and is like, "Daddy, I can't feel my legs. Daddy, where are you going?" And he's like, "No, I don't want to go to jail." And cops are dragging him off out of the hospital room.
I would like to see what that Google alert looked like.
It's probably very complicated knowing Barbara.
I know it wouldn't be. For some reason, I think of it as the little paperclip that used to that would appear in the corner of the Microsoft Works pages.
Oh, goodness.
It looks like you want to murder someone.
That's something else about the Oracle series, is that she ended up pretty hardcore. Like, there was the bit where she blacked out while beating someone's head into the concrete and possibly broke someone else's spine.
They did refer to someone as a meat puppet, yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing. Like, I knew that she was a hardcore martial artist, but not necessarily like a hardcore insane person.
She wasn't even a hardcore martial artist.
Well, she was good with Eskrima, with the sticks.
Yeah, but she hasn't really used those in...
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess years at this point. She's been Oracle for a long time.
But not even Frank Miller drew her like that, or wrote her like that.
Yeah. You know, I would actually love it if the new Batgirl had the personality of Frank Miller's Batgirl, where she's like a teenager and she just thinks life is awesome, and that's why she should get to be Batgirl. Because being Batgirl would be super cool. But I'm betting on, like, angst, probably.
Yeah, that is a good bet. That's the way you'd keep your money.
Yeah. Teen comics and angst, I don't know. But that does give me a nice, clean move to the Final Crisis Aftermath Dance, which was a comic by Joe Casey and Chris Cross that came out this week. And it's about the super young team from Final Crisis, a team of Japanese teenage heroes, and what they do after they've saved the world. And I liked it a lot, in part because it wasn't Teen Titans, which is probably pretty mean to say. But they're young heroes who actually like being heroes. They're not...
Mean? That's so out of character.
Yeah, I know.
You.
Like, teenagers who like their life? What is that about? All of the angst is... it's like Saved by the Bell style angst, where one person likes another but is too shy to say. And then another the person who's liked actually likes someone else and said it, but it was while the end of the world was going on, so no one heard it. So there are a lot of little thought bubbles, like, you know, she had to have heard what I said, but I love her so much, blah, 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 blah. And the rest is just like...
And then later a thought bubble, I saw him saying something, but I just couldn't hear it over the world ending.
Yeah, it's like a fun... It's basically what I would like out of Teen Titans, where it's like teen heroes who hang out, they know each other, and they're not being threatened with like evil Teen Titans every single time, you know, it comes around. It's by... Joe Casey has been working the kind of, I guess, pop culture... celebrity superheroes thing for a while. He did The Intimates with Wildstorm and kind of a legion of artists, and it was basically superhero high school where some of the kids are nerds but are trying to be cool. Others are super rich and they don't really want to, you know, hang out at a superhero high school because they could be driving fast cars and doing interesting things. But what did you think about Dance? I know you paged through it a little bit.
Kind of made me feel like the old lady who's sitting on her porch in a rocking chair talking about kids these days. It's not that they're bad or anything, it's just that they keep being in these bizarre situations and they act like they're bizarre.
Yeah.
And it's that post-Joss Whedon self-consciousness that I think maybe I've had a little too much of. I kind of feel like how my mom felt when I showed her Heathers for the first time. Just being like, oh, they think they're so important, these kids, and they know nothing.
It's funny you mentioned the self-consciousness, because Most Excellent Superbat, kind of the rich character of the team, has an ongoing Twitter stream during the comic where he'll remark on what people do. Like, shy, crazy Lolita, the little tiny bird chick, when they mention they're going to have a party, she's like, is there going to be an open bar? And he's like, you know, why does she need an open bar? She's 6 inches tall. Like, one drink gets her drunk enough for eight people. But that's actually a revisiting of something Joe Casey did in The Intimates, where he had this running info bar, like CNN, across the bottom pages of the comic. And it was like 200 words a piece on every page. So it makes the comic super dense, and it comments on the comic while it's going on. But, like, the pacing is just torn to shreds because of that. And it was an interesting experiment back then, and I'm kind of glad that he has an outlet for it now to kind of do the meta-commentary while it's going on. But back then, it was super hard to read.
I do feel like an old fogey. I kind of... It seems like the rarest thing that you can find these days are just traditional superhero comics.
Yeah.
Where they... consider that they have responsibilities, and then they go out and they fight crime. Because I was looking through all my books, and in the past few years, I cannot find any instance where the main story is them seeing a criminal doing something to someone else, going out, trying to stop him, encountering a problem, overcoming the problem, and then stopping it. You'll see them stopping crime, but it's always like a mugging or some kind of
like a maybe a purse snatching,
a bank robbery that they're doing on the way to that deeply personal battle.
Yeah, it's all
against
vendetta
their
now.
Sworn nemesis who has just kidnapped their teen sidekick. There just haven't been too many stories about any superheroes solving crimes that don't directly involve themselves. I mean, I'd like for a Batman comic where he goes out and stops some bank robbers and then something's happening in the background.
Yeah. That's a good... I'm trying to think of one that's just super straightforward like that. And I'm seriously coming up blank. Like, Iron Fist is all about, like, the history of Iron Fist and how a bunch of people want to kill an Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. Batman is the Black Glove and all that stuff. Batwoman's probably going to be about the crime Bible, who wants to kill Batwoman.
It seems like the safest thing superheroes can do at this point is retire. And then the villains will retire. And then the police will be able to deal with what's going on.
Okay, speaking of heroes who are always fighting things that hate them or, you know, very specific story arcs, Superman Batman number 60 came out this week by Michael Green and Mike Johnson, with art by Francis Manapul, who's actually going to be drawing the new Superboy series, Adventure Comics. And I know you're a big fan of this comic, and I'm a huge fan too, because it's the one comic that seems like it doesn't care about anything at all. It's just going to tell an awesome story. This issue, basically, it starts like with the story already going. Like, the very first page is Batman swinging through a city, and you think it's Gotham, but his very first line is something's wrong with Gotham City, and he doesn't recognize the place. And Batman and Superman have been sent to Gothamopolis, where Gotham and Metropolis have been merged in some universe, and instead of the Justice League and the Teen Titans, they're the Justice Titans. So there are characters like Night Lantern, which is a mix of Hal Jordan and Dick Grayson. There's Donna Wonder, which isn't the best name, but it's Donna Troy and Wonder Woman. And the Flash is just the Flash, because he is on both the Justice League and the Teen Titans. But Esther, I know you like this series a lot, and I do too, but what do you think about it?
I love it. I think it's just pure imagination and fun and adrenaline. And okay, it also doesn't really follow the storyline that I outlined just a minute ago about fighting crime that doesn't have anything to do with you. But it just has this energy. And I know that it won't get sucked into greater continuity.
Yeah, which is really nice. There's not going to be a, you know, surprise double crisis crossover or something going on. I like that it's so dumb. Like, the Justice League and the Teen Titans being one group and that splitting all their names is a really dumb thing, but it's just funny. And, like, it makes for really fun comics, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, comics when I was a kid were really, really dumb. Like, I know Gav's a big fan of Venom, but Venom's origin is seriously, he found something that hated Spider-Man, and he hated Spider-Man because Spider-Man ruined his career, so he became a mass murderer monster. And, like, for origins, that's not the best.
As you do.
Yeah. But, I mean, that leads to great pages in Superman Batman where, like, they're they're proving Superman and Batman are viewed as, I guess, not necessarily villains, but they're new and they're possibly evil. So they have to prove that they're good guys. So they're like, no, we know who you are.
So, and they have the traditional big fight between superheroes until suddenly one of the other superheroes knocks down a helicopter.
Yeah.
And they're like, you saved those people. Then you must be good.
And Batman, of course, is like, don't trust me, trust him. He never lies.
Because only the pure Batman of heart could commit BFF. One unselfish act.
But I really like the bit where they're proving that they're good by like telling them all of them their real names. Which, if you think about it too hard, it wouldn't make them good at all. It just make them more of a threat.
Yeah.
But it's just funny. I mean, Starfire is mixed with Black Canary for some reason, so she's Star Canary. Aquaman and Cyborg mix. Hawkman and Beast Boy, which I guess fits. But then his name is Gar Katar.
Oh, that's fantastic!
And the one change they made is that Wally West isn't Wally West. He's Wally Allen for Iris Allen.
And he's blonde.
Yeah, and he's that's a good point. Maybe he's not actually... Oh, he could be Bart, who grew up to be Flash. Or I guess half Bart. Because he went from... Or no, Bart isn't blonde. Yeah, I don't know. But it's just really dumb, fun comics.
Or it just has blonde eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. Doomsday being mixed with Deathstroke was kind of
Doomstroke,
a stroke of genius.
Doomstroke, that's good.
Because he's just Doomsday wearing Deathstroke's costume and an eye patch. And, you know, giant bone sword.
He looks kind of like a massive chicken.
Oh, he does. Yeah, I hadn't even realized that until now.
If they kill him off by frying him up, that'd be fantastic.
I just want him to never die, so he'll always stick around. Alright, the issue ends on another ridiculous mashup amalgam character, and instead of Joker and Lex Luthor, you have Lex Joker, who is, he basically looks just like Lex Luthor, except he has a ridiculous smile on his face. And
he has the Joker eyebrows, too.
Oh, yeah, he does. And it's just another, like, really, really dumb thing that you would think of when you're about 8 years old, and it's awesome to see in a comic. Like, it's eight-year-old fun. Oh, and green eyes. And he's wearing a black, purple, and green suit. But he mentions a few other mashup characters, like Brainy Cat, which I assume is Brainiac plus Catwoman, Pinguello, which Penguin and Metallo, maybe?
Yeah.
And Jimmy Two-Face. Well, my fingers crossed is that it's Jimmy Olsen and Two-Face, because Jimmy Olsen probably really is Superman's greatest villain. Like, just over the years, including the 60s, when he would dress up as a giant turtle and fight Superman. Or, like, try to turn Superman into a tiger-headed monster or something. Like, I feel like he deserves his place in that pantheon of heroes. But before we, I guess, started recording, I asked a couple of people if they had ideas for things for us to talk about. And two of our Savage Critics friends, Jeff Lester and Graham McMillan, wanted us to talk about our first comic book crushes. I was like, okay, well, that's gross. So I changed it to entry-level comic book characters, like the ones you attach to at first.
I would have just lied anyway. So,
which one is yours? Who's your entry? Who's your entry character?
My entry character is, without a doubt, Barbara Gordon in the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been about 12 at the time, and was just all I knew about Batman was the 1989 movie and the series.
60s TV show? Or
never saw that.
Oh, wow.
Going into the 1989 movie, I thought it was a completely original concept. And then when I saw the series, I really loved that. And they introduced the commissioner's daughter. She was interesting and all. And then they had her put on the bat costume and just run around as Batgirl. And I was just like, oh my god! It's a girl who's Batman! No one has ever thought of anything this cool!
That's so fun.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, like, Batgirl costume? Because she's had a few over the years. There's, like, the buggy-eyed Batgirl from the Batman, which I think is a good design, but not necessarily a good Batgirl design.
Yeah, well, that's... All the characters have buggy eyes in the Batman.
Yeah, that's fair.
The costume is just for practicality.
Yeah.
You can't blind her. But the original costume is still the best. I still like Batman with the big yellow oval on the chest, and I still like her in her original blue and gray outfit.
Okay. Because I thought the Cassandra Cain outfit was pretty cool in like a post-Matrix, you know, heroes are grittier and harder now. But I really like the 1960s Batgirl TV costume because it's like just shiny purple and a gold belt. And it doesn't make any sense, but it's another one of those things where you're just kind of like, wow, that looks really great. And the motorcycle with like the scalloped fin wings.
Yeah.
Yeah. More heroes need motorcycles, I think. But my entry character was Jubilee from the X-Men. And I wasn't 10 yet. I was maybe 8 or 9 when I started reading X-Men. And that's like the perfect age to think that being a teenager is the greatest thing in the world.
Oh, you know?
It's like you're watching Saved by the Bell and all of that crap. And you're just like, yes, being a teenager is great. Adults suck. You know? And basically, that's what Jubilee
was. I'll have it all figured out by then.
Yeah. Like, I'm already smarter than all the adults. Being a teenager just means I'll be funnier, too, you know? And Jubilee was that character who was, like, obviously written by an adult trying to be a teenager. Like, all of her little slang and little sayings and witticisms was very strange. But she was, you know, like, for an 8 and 9-year-old, we don't know any better, because all the teenagers we know are actually written by adults anyway.
Yeah.
And so she was the youngest member of the team. She would hang along, she would hang out and tag along and basically have fun and make fun of the other members. So, like, I really latched onto her. And one of my favorite Jubilee scenes, actually, is when the X-Men are fighting the Brood. And basically the Brood are, like, take the Queen aliens from Alien. Mm-hmm. They're all like that, and only they talk and, like, they... Also, they're, you know, they have spaceships they fly around in, despite not using any weapons or material at all. They can lay eggs. They're really very much alien ripoff. And there was a bit where there was a Ghost Rider and X-Men crossover. And Ghost Rider's whole deal is that he's got a flaming skull on a motorcycle. So I was also a huge Ghost Rider fan when I was young.
I thought he had chains,
too. Oh, yeah, also chains. And he's got spikes on his fists. Like, as if that's not enough. But he
Marvel just likes the characters with the spiky hands.
Yeah, that makes punching a lot more fun for some reason. I mean, Wolverine has them. Spider-Man had them for a while. Goodness.
Lady Deathstrike, although...
Oh, yeah.
All of Wolverine's... She can't punch. She can just claw.
Yeah. Her fingers are way too long to make a fist anyway, so... I think all of Wolverine's villains have claws or spikes. But basically, Ghost Rider gets infected with the Brood Spore. So you get a flaming-headed alien monster with chains and spikes. And that's like the cliffhanger for the last issue. The opening of the next issue is like close up on Jubilee, and she's kind of like cringing away and like eyes wide. She's like, does anybody know if I'm too young to join the New Warriors? And as a kid, I was like, you know, that is hilarious because it's talking about another comic, and that's just what I would say if I were in that situation. But of course, you know, probably not true, but whatever. Anyway, I know you had one last thing you wanted to talk about in Battle for the Cowl.
Well, Battle for the Cowl, I think it should be renamed, you know, Jason Todd's Big Secret or Deep Dark Past or something like that, because... Yeah. Nothing changed except we had that revelation that something terrible happened to Jason Todd in his past. You were thinking child abuse. I was thinking sexual abuse. They tend to go to either of those when it's...
Because it's the easy punch, I guess, which says a lot about comics.
On the plus side, it means that they can have that emotional scene where he goes all to pieces and confesses what it was.
Yeah.
And then... It being comics, he can turn around and be like, I'm all better now.
Oh, yeah. Dick
Watch
Grayson would hug
good
him.
Hero.
And, like, finally give him his blessing to be a Robin. That might not have the right effect. I don't know. But one thing about Jason's secret was, like, Batman having the video will, where he's like, you know, I really should have gotten you help when you were a kid because you were broken. And Alfred knows a therapist. Like, that just... That just seems so amazingly callous to me. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I would say the one where he calls Jason his biggest failure.
Yeah.
Because you can read that both ways. You can read it, oh, I failed you, Jason. I failed you. And by I failed you, I mean you're nowhere near up to my moral standards. Or,
oh, goodness.
Or you just, I tried, but you screwed it up. And you know that if you're... He kind of means it both ways.
Yeah.
The thing about Jason is no one likes him coming back to life. I've checked all the message boards, and I am actually perfectly happy with it, because I just... the way he died, a death in the family, I've never read it, and I'm never going to, because the idea of a lonely teenage boy finding out that he has his real mother somewhere, going to her, seeking her out, having this tearful reunion with her, just before she hands him over to a psychotic killer who beats him basically half to death right in front of her while she does nothing, and then leaves them both, him in agony, in a warehouse with a bomb. And just before they make it out of the warehouse, the bomb goes off and kills them both. That is god awful.
Yeah, that is pretty depressing when you put it like that.
That is so far beyond anything that I would want to read in comics that I couldn't even, when I first heard about it, take it in comics continuity. It didn't just make me unhappy with continuity. I am a less happy human being for having heard that story. My life is not as good as it could have been if they hadn't written that. So any way they fix that, I'm happy with it. You know, punch it in time and have him turn into a killer,
yeah,
or have him get sucked into the Speed Force and spat
shot
that
out like he's an 8-year-old.
Yeah, anything.
Yeah, no, I think my favorite part, and like by favorite, I mean, I don't like it at all, but it's the one that sticks out the most from Death in the Family, was when he was looking for his mother, like, all over the world, and one of his prospects was Lady Shiva.
Oh, yeah.
I still don't understand how, like, Batman wasn't just like, she's not your mother, Jason, it's okay. Like, we shouldn't go talk to the greatest killer in the entire world and see if she's your mother. Because I found you in Gotham trying to steal my hubcaps, and that means you're probably not a great assassin, you know? Though I guess that did lead to, like...
You're probably not going to get stellar mothering from her. So Cassandra maybe Cain if it's didn't. Her, we'll just let it go.
Yeah. I do like that the Cassandra Cain Batgirl is her daughter. I thought that actually made sense because, hey, greatest assassin in the world, greatest other assassin in the world, you know. But Jason Todd, not so much.
There's a little creepy eugenics vibe to it, as it turned out. But
yeah, apparently there were maybe a dozen different assassin babies, but...
But it's comics. Every single character is kind of blood-related to every single other character.
Or
you go long enough, someone's going to find out they're, like, your long-lost cousin or
something. Wolverine has to have, like, 80 or 90, like, great-great-great-grandkids at this point.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for Superman and Batman to find out that Martha Wayne was knocked up by Jor-El.
It always bothered me as a kid that it was Martha Wayne and Martha Kent.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, they wouldn't always say their last name, so I was like, wait, are they brothers? Like, what's going on? You know, I was a dumb kid. But, like, speaking of people who know people and are, like, practically blood-related, before Spider-Man was born, Wolverine had a mission with Peter and... Not Peter. Oh, I forget his... Basically, Peter Parker's father and his mother, because they were spies. And at the end of the book, Wolverine's like, you guys are gonna have a kid. Hope he's a good one. And it's like, that's the sort of thing we don't really need, you know? Like, we know Wolverine's old, we know Peter Parker had spy parents for some strange reason, but, like, we don't need the kind of wink-wink, nudge-nudge, like, I wonder if he likes spiders, you know? That's basically all we got this time. We'll probably see you in the next couple of weeks with some more.
We'll have it together, then.
Yeah, definitely. This is just the first try, kind of shooting away in the dark, fighting with this stupid audio recording program. But thanks for listening. Give us a review if you like it, and we'll see you on the website, fourthletter.net.